Get your game on. Perfect Game with Michelle Coore is your interactive radio magazine.
We're visiting with Stephen Ashbrook, acoustic rock singer-songwriter, to share his passion to perform. Stephen, how were you first exposed to music? How old were you?
Well, I didn't really grow up with a lot of music in the house, particularly rock and roll. You know, my father was a Lutheran preacher, you know, and there was Bridge Over Troubled Water by Simon and Garfunkel in their collection, and Jesus Christ Superstar. And so that was like the closest thing to rock and roll I had. And I remember like listening to Foreigner 4. It was a record that it really made me want to play guitar. I was like, oh my God, listen to the guitars, you know, and Jukebox Hero and stuff like that. And a funny side story is like, I was cranking up Foreigner 4 in my house the other day, and my son, who's almost 6, comes walking in, and after the song was over, he kind of looks at me, he's like, Dad, play that Jukebox Hero song again.
Jukebox, oh my God, how cute.
and I didn't even correct him. I was just like, you got it, buddy. Here it comes. You know, and I cranked it up for him. And
I can't help but wonder what it was I was looking for. I ain't trying.
So your parents really helped encourage you and build your confidence?
They're very supportive of my music. You know, when I was 13, my parents kind of said, you know, for your birthday, we can get you some skis or a guitar. And I chose the guitar. It was funny, you know, because on my birthday, you know, I opened the guitar and it's this classical nylon string guitar, you know. And within a month, I took it back and got an electric, you know. So Fender Strat was my first guitar.
Yeah, that's rock and roll.
You said you were 13, and were there programs available at the time to kind of help you cultivate your passion?
Well, I mean, there's band in school. I played saxophone in seventh grade, but I didn't like the teacher. And looking back now, I think maybe the teacher was a frustrated musician that didn't want to be teaching a band of seventh graders. You know, I felt like that was very structured, and I would have liked to have had someone maybe show me with a little more passion or something like that, or get some exposure to some real musicians rather than just reading lines off of a piece of paper, you know.
Yeah, I read what you said, but it takes more to keep me down. Because I thought it out of me, you have obviously ever seen, and I'm stronger than all of these small town things you've thrown at me, but I can't let you let me down.
Well, at what time did you decide this is what you wanted to do? That you know that this is your extreme passion, that you wanted to become a professional musician?
Well, there was two moments. Like one, like I said, when I was a sophomore in high school, I kind of felt just this epiphany, and I went and got my buddy out of his classroom, you know, somehow. And it's like, I told him in the hall, like, I know what I'm going to do, you know, because I'd spoken to the class, the counselor, you know, the career counselor that every high school kid has to talk to. And, you know, he's kind of laying out all these things, and it's like, where do you see yourself, and what are your passions? And he was very uninspiring, and I just remember thinking at that time in my head, I wonder if this is what he planned for himself, to be a school counselor.
Because I can't let you let me down. Yeah, you thought you were the king, but you were just a clown.
What were some of your dreams or aspirations? I mean, you said you knew you wanted to be a musician, but how high did you want to take that? Where could you see yourself in the future?
Well, I think once I started playing music professionally, I realized that there were many different tiers of success. And I think a trap that a lot of musicians fall into is they think they have to be, you know, the Rolling Stones or Prince or Madonna on this up in the stratosphere level, you know, of stardom, whereas there's a lot of really great artists that you're not going to hear on the radio, you're not going to see them on MTV or VH1, but yet they're making a great living, they're touring, they're filling rooms, and have very passionate fans.
You haven't yet seen my face on the cover of a Rolling Stone.
I did have a goal, like when I first started playing, I thought, I want to at least get to a level where I'm touring on a tour bus and playing venues and traveling around the country. And I've done a lot of touring, a lot of van touring, stuff like that. And I was just kind of saying about a month ago to my wife, I was like, you know, I still never really gotten to where I'm touring on a tour bus. And she kind of looked at me blankly and she said, "Are you crazy? You fly everywhere. That's way better." And I was like, yeah. "Oh, yeah." I was like,
God, it's all about perspective.
I know. I was like, "God, I guess you're right." You know, it's like I have so fixated on this goal, I didn't realize I had shot past it and was on this other goal. I was like, "God, you're right. You know, it is better to fly."
What are some of the obstacles that you've had to overcome?
Well, I think it's the same thing in most other people's profession too, that I think apathy is the biggest creativity killer in the world. And as an artist, you know, I can make something great, but until I share it with somebody, it doesn't really come full circle for me. I would never be an artist that would be satisfied sitting in my bedroom writing songs for myself and then turning the page and writing another song. You know, I need to communicate it. And when I see that song totally connect with a complete stranger, that's it for me. My will is good and my heart is a strong one. I know the difference in scotch and the handgun.
Scotch and the handgun. Last night, you talked about your process of actually how you developed a song or how you made that move. Can you share that with us again?
When I first started writing songs and recording them, I would just hate everything that I heard back. Record it and listen back and just cringe and be like, oh, that was, you know, I sang that flat or that wasn't good enough. And so I would try it again and finally got to a place where I think two things happened. One was either that I finally relaxed and just let myself, you know, sing and play and record, and it truly got better because I wasn't trying so hard. Or I lowered my expectations down to where it finally sounded good to me, you know. When I say when, you just let go. Geronimo. Sometimes the flaws are what make things cool and make them special. Particularly for songwriting and recording, you know, you always hear the happy accidents or that type of thing. But in art, nobody wants a computer, you know. It's like they want the humanity of it, and the flaws and the scars are part of it. You can have anything you want, you were always told. Turns out you get everything you want, but what you want the most. What are your thoughts about arts and education and the importance of it? Yeah, I think that everyone needs to be exposed to good art early. When my son was first born, I would sit and watch cartoons with him or you know, little children's shows and stuff. And the first thing I thought was, boy, this music is kind of terrible, you know? I mean, I totally understand that they're trying to be educational, but I think a lot of them have forgot to be graceful at the same time. I can't help but wonder what it was I was looking for. For me, you know, particularly when I was younger, you know, everyone would say, like, you know, when are you going to be discovered? You know, I can't wait till you get discovered. And it was always discovered. It's like, discovered, you know, but
I already exist.
I know. It's like, I'm right here.
I pay taxes. I exist.
Right. It's not like they're, you know, you're Lewis and Clark or something. You know, it's like, I've been here the whole time. But I don't need to be discovered, man, because I was never lost. That's rock and roll. A lot of artists will like sit and make art and then wait for some sort of entity to tap them on the shoulder and deem them worthy to make art on a bigger scale or something, which I think people need to decide, like, am I an artist or am I a musician? Am I this? You make the decision for yourself. That's rock and roll.
What advice do you have for parents to have little ones that show, you know, an interest in music?
You know, musically, I think that just exposing them to great music early is good. You know, I don't think that if all the kids are hearing are kids' songs, I think there are a lot of really great children's music, but I think they need to kind of hear our music too. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens with our schools. Music programs are being cut, you know, and athletic programs and, you know, physical fitness gym. And I understand, but that doesn't mean that we as a civilization need to just not teach our kids art or expose them to music or something like that. That just means that maybe as parents, we need to pick up the ball and run with it a little bit more.
Well, Stephen, it's been such an honor and a joy to, well, first have you in my life as my friend, but second have you here joining us today to share your story with us. We want to encourage everyone, if you'd like to show up at the Spirit Room in Jerome tonight. What time, Stephen?
8 o'clock. I'll start.
8 o'clock tonight. If not, go to StephenAshbrook.com. That's StephenAshbrook.com.
You've been listening to Perfect Game with Michelle Corr. Visit our podcast at PerfectGameRadio.com.